It's time for the Artist Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I am an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie. And I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Kale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot. Tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. And welcome to the Artist Friends Podcast. This is Clyde J. Kale. And you're listening to episode 73 for November the 30th, 2020, our last episode for the month of November. And I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Okay. This week, in this episode, we're going to talk about the making of and the mystery of the movie about Vincent van Gogh, the Loving Vincent, which was the movie that was 100% the animated 100% each single frame was hand painted by an artist. And that was what was spectacular. Now I had a link. If you go to, www.talkartpodcast.com. That's talkartpodcast.com. There's the links for the some secondary videos we're going to talk about. And I got lucky, and the entire movie was on YouTube at the time I posted that. It's now been taken down. So unfortunately, you can't, for our listeners, you won't be able to watch the movie. But if you get an opportunity, I really, if you love art, you would really enjoy watching the movie. It's about an hour and 34 minutes long, the animated movie Loving Vincent. It is spectacular. It's available on YouTube if you want to pay. You can pay. I think it's, you can rent the movie, and watch it on YouTube. So it's available there for that. And I think it's probably on Amazon, and I'm not sure. It might even be on Netflix. I highly recommend you check it out. Now, when I first watched this movie, there was a theory that was presented in the movie I had never heard of before, that quite possibly Vincent van Gogh was murdered, that he didn't commit suicide. Now, the story for hundreds of years has been he shot himself in the stomach in an attempted suicide attempt. However, the proposition that they proposed in the movie was that he was possibly murdered by somebody else, either intentional or possibly accidentally. I had never heard of that, so that's what fascinated me. So I did some research and everything. And a couple of the links, there is a really excellent, they did a short 12-minute link from 60 Minutes, because I guess in the 2015 or 2016, there was a Van Gogh exhibition traveling of his paintings traveling throughout the United States. So 60 Minutes did a little special thing. And these gentlemen were researching the theory that Vincent Van Gogh had been murdered. And the information they present is so compelling and so plausible. I mean, after you watch that, I think you might come to the same conclusion. Diane, what about you?
Yeah, from what the evidence or whatever that they uncovered and how they were checking out how far it would have been from where they said he had shot himself to the village, and you know what, that's probably not what happened. It probably happened in that garden there, but they said in town where yeah.
That was like only a half a mile away. I mean,
yeah, that's somewhere.
With the original theory, you know, it was like three miles away. He would have had to walk 3 miles away with his stomach bleeding in his stomach to get back to the hotel where he was staying. Plus, climb over a
that was rough terrain. Yeah,
that's what they said.
In a garden wall and everything, versus the new theory that they've come up, where he was shot in that courtyard that was only a half a mile away down the street, would make more plausible sense. So he could have gotten back to the house. And what, of course, see, everybody has said that there was no gun. Where was the gun? There was no gun found. No, you know, where did he get the gun from? You know, and so the original story was all pretty much, they got the original story from the proprietors of the hotel. They were the ones who propagated the story that he had committed suicide. But with that investigation, when they went back, this gentleman who did that research, there was a lot more other people that didn't get talked
about. Yeah, and they also said the angle of the way the bullet had gone into his body, it would have been impossible for him to have done that to himself.
Self-inflicted. Yeah. They said there was some children that, or young teens or whatever, that used to really torment him and aggravate him every day. It was like it was in the summertime, and that they would follow him out to where he liked to go paint and just, you know, just torment him, you know. So,
yeah, that.
They're thinking that maybe those guys were responsible, but he just didn't want them to be
accused,
that he
may
not want to be accused of it.
He was in a bit of a wretched state. You know, he was experiencing the symptoms of syphilis, you know, and so but at the same time, like in Loving Vincent, what I love, the proposition is they actually read letters from his, you know, his letters to his brother Theo, and letters they'd written to, like, the postmaster, who was his good friend, you know. And I love when he had the conversation with his son, of in the Loving Vincent part movie, he says, yes, he had problems. He went to the asylum, and when he got out of the asylum, he was cured. Because right here, he wrote a letter. He says, in the letter, he says, I am feeling cured, and I am feeling the best I've ever been, and eager to get back to work. And then 6 weeks later, he commits suicide. Change in 6 weeks, you know.
I can see where somebody could change in 6 weeks if you know, it doesn't take long for your stinking thinking to get a hold of you. 6 weeks is, it can happen, but I mean, it goes more to those children who they said that were aggravating him on a daily basis during the summer that year. Maybe he just didn't want to ruin their lives by accusing them of what they did. But
to begin to pronounce the name of the city, I think it's called Auvers or something.
Yeah, Auvers.
That area was considered a basically like a playground for the rich. It was, you know, a lot of the wealthy people take their vacations there. So a lot of these kids came from wealthy families, and they had money. And Vincent would let them tease him, because they would pay his bar bill. You know, they pay for his drink, you know, and everything. So that kind of explains why, even though they tormented him and they teased him and everything, they, you know, he still kind of hung around with him. And that's what a lot of other people, a lot of testimony, a lot of people said, they always saw him hanging with those kids.
Yeah. And if he was drinking again, he could have gotten depressed again, because alcohol is a depressant. I mean, if you drink alcohol on a daily basis, it's actually a depressant. I mean, you're happy and in good mood when you're drinking, but then when you wake up the next day, you don't feel worth a darn, you know. I don't think the people in Europe, they drank a lot, you know. And so, you know, a lot of people have problems with it and not.
The evidence was just so, that was, it's so plausible. It is so plausible that, you know, it would, if it was presented in a court, it would hold up in court. I mean, these guys did some excellent research, and they went back and found all these other people, you know, who gave testimony, and they, you know, that struck me with the movie. Other than, you know, obviously I was extremely fascinated with the quality of the animation and everything. What'd you think about the video where they talk about the making? Yeah, the making of it.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty impressive. I mean, to have done that, because they were talking about how for every frame of the film, they had to repaint the paintings completely, in some cases, in a lot of cases. So I forget how many the numbers were, how many paintings they ended up making throughout the whole movie. But I just can't. And the number of artists that they had do it all so that it could get done. I mean, it still took them a long time to get it all done.
I think there was every 12th of a second they had to do a new frame and do a new painting. Change that painting. That painting, every 12th of a second they had to change the positions and of the people that they were portraying in the painting.
I know when I was in college, I took an animation class. This is before computers. So it was similar to what they were doing. They were doing everything by hand. They weren't using computers really too much. But we had to make an animation. I don't remember how long it was. It might have been like for a minute. And I had hundreds of drawings. And it was just a drawing one, you know. Yep. But because you had every little tiny movement, you have to draw another, you know, version of what you just drew. So when you flip through we were making flip books. And so when you flip the pages, it would, you know, the thing would move and do all that stuff. But I just can't imagine doing paintings, like that many paintings to do that. Yeah. The amount of work for that is just incredible.
My hat's off to the artist. They did, you know, and they had 100, and the numbers always go up and down. One interview will say 120, another interview says 125. I think what happened was they probably had that 125, but then after a while, the artist got burnt out. And so,
yeah, I'm sure they did. I mean, that one woman they had on there, she said that after it was 2.5 months or something, she was away from her family, working constantly pretty much. And she had enough and went home. They probably went through a lot of artists.
This took them 5 years, you know, 5 years to.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
You know,
and that's a long time to commit yourself to a project too, you know, and it's hard enough doing art that long, but then to do it in not your style, in someone else's style, that's a lot. And it does,
you have to learn the Van Gogh style.
Yeah. It does affect your own work too, when you're working in somebody else's style. So it's, I don't know. They'd have to, I don't know how they interviewed the artists to find the ones that they found to work on that project, but
yeah,
I wonder what kind of criteria they used to interview them, like how to find people that would do that.
On one side of me, yeah, oh, I would love to participate, but then the other side, oh no, the amount of
work. You got to give up. How many months did some of those artists stay there before they got a break from it? Well, I think one girl said 8 months, you know, that she had.
They were working long, long days too.
Mm-hmm. 10 and 12 hours a day. Mm-hmm. That'll drain you.
And they had, three different studios, you know, where they were at. located around Europe, you know, and they were the main ones in Poland, and I think they had a studio in Germany, and you know, a studio in England, and it's like, oh my God.
They put them in little cubicles to do the work with a screen and a thing for them to paint on.
They would only show.
Yeah, that's hard.
Because, you know, they would do all the, you know, the live act, they would do the, you know, the filming with the actors, you know, and then they would just show, you know, just the, like you said, the 12 seconds, and they would have to create the paintings for those, you know, for those 12 seconds, yeah, you know, seconds of a video. And I like where they were interviewing one artist and said that, so you had to swallow your ego, because you would have this beautiful painting, and then they would say, okay, you got to scrape it off and redo it, do it at this angle. You know, and you had to keep.
Yeah. Almost every 12th of a second they made a new painting for. I thought that was pretty, that's pretty in depth. I mean, to.
Yes. Yeah. I mean.
And they said that each painting probably took them several hours, if not several days, to paint.
Mm-hmm. I would think it would be depending on whether they had to do the whole things. You know, if they were starting a new segment of the film, they would have to do a whole new painting and then move the characters through it. And that would take less time. But still, it takes time, you know, to set up the whole painting for them to use.
And it was, you know, so. Besides doing this, it was also just putting it all together was a major technical achievement. You know, the way they, you know. So the film itself is a true work of art. Just the film itself is a work of art. And you know the beautiful thing about this, what really touched me, this is all done for the love of Vincent. I mean, it was done because they loved Vincent Van Gogh. They wanted to do something to honor him. And There was no thought of winning awards or making a lot of money, and in fact, the movie,
the labor of love, you know,
the labor of love, because I like the producer, the director was the producer was, it was a husband and wife team. He was English and she was Polish, and the story is that she had been struggling as an artist. And she read she admired, always admired Vincent Van Gogh, and was reading one of his letters. And one of her letters inspired her and changed her life so much that she wanted to give something back. So she was going to make, since her husband was an Academy Award winning director, he had made an animated movie a couple years earlier and won an Academy Award for it. And he approached him with the idea, but she was only going, you know, just a little short 7 minutes. And he told her, he says, why not make this a full length movie production? So that's
he saw how many people were interested in it once she put the idea out there. But wasn't there something that he saw, like a line of people waiting to see her?
What inspired him was he was in England.
The letters.
Yeah, they had all they had. They didn't have any of Van Gogh's paintings. They just had Van Gogh's letters on display in a museum, and he saw a line of people around the block waiting in the freezing cold to get in to see those letters. And
So he knew at that point that there was so much interest in what she was planning on doing, that she should do a full length movie about it.
So, yeah,
that was just by chance, really.
And so she just, you know, wanted to give back to him. And then this project just grew and grew. And they started up a GoFundMe fund or a fundraising thing to gain people to get extra money to pay the artists, you know. And they had gotten $5 million financed. In fact, I think they said the movie only costs like, you know, everything about like $10 million, you know. They had $5 million already for just production, but they needed some more money to pay the artists. And so they did. They got, they crowdfunded the money, and they got that and got the project going and everything. And I don't know how much money it's made since then. Since it's been shown, and it started out and just being shown.
They didn't really give any information about that.
Yeah. It's being shown in first in just museums and art museums around the world, you know, premiering, and then it eventually got to into theaters. And the composer of the music, he was actually nominated for an Academy Award, and you know, he didn't win, but at least it did get a couple Academy Award nominations, you know, for animation and for, you know, for the music. But the beautiful thing about it is this was a work of art. The film itself is a work of art. Everything that went into it, you know,
they created new ways of working too that had never been used before. So, you know, they created all this new technology or whatever to be able to do it.
Absolutely. Because animation has been around now for a while, and there's a thing they call a rotoscope. You know, a lot of people say, well, no, it's rotoscope. And in fact, the director, I love when he was being interviewed, you know, he said, we could have done it the more traditional way, but it wouldn't have the same feel. We wanted to have Vincent van Gogh paintings coming alive. And then when they broke down the different scenes, that were the background was that they were in Van Gogh's paintings, of his different paintings, you know, which I thought,
mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of put them all together from different parts from different paintings together. That was kind of interesting.
And I cracked up when he said, we've set filmmaking back 100 years, because this is the worst way to make a movie.
The hardest way to make a movie.
long way around.
Longest and the hardest way to make a movie. So anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, our listeners, please, if you get the opportunity, love art, and if you love Vincent van Gogh's art, watch Loving Vincent, and it'll bring tears to you. Okay, I think we're going to wrap up this episode. You have been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 73. And this is Clive J. Kale. And we've been talking with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And anything, have we any announcements to make or anything? Or you're
having a sale in my store. Oh, well, it ended today, but I'm probably going to put things on sale again. So, as we get closer to
I
need to do it in the beginning of the month of December to get people to come in and buy.
We've got sales going on, you know, and it was so, you know, that's what it is, you know, with the holidays. Diane, your exhibition is still going on, right?
That goes on till the 19th December.
Last week, Diane and Constance talked to. We've been just kind of like, you know, they give me a little bit of input, but most of the time I just kind of scratch my head and say, okay, let's pick this subject this week. We've got we're going to have a little bit of a schedule. We're going to have like 1 week we'll be talking about our craft and the actual improving and what we technique and studio practice. And then the next week, maybe some more art history. And then a week after that, maybe social media. We're going to try to have a little more structure. So everything is open for discussion. So we'll see how that goes. Anyhow, thank you so much for listening, folks. Thank you, Diane and Constance. And I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. I sure did. And I'll say goodbye to Diane and Constance, and bye-bye, Diane.
Bye, Clyde. Bye, Constance. Bye, everyone.
Bye, Constance.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks, and thank you so much for listening.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.